everyone, and welcome to The Currency Exchange, a NatWest Markets podcast all about foreign exchange markets. I'll be your host today. I'm Brian Dangerfield. I co-head the G10 FX strategy team here at NatWest. You know, it's been a pretty important couple of weeks for major currency markets, and for the major currencies, we've actually spent the past couple of weeks on the podcast discussing some of the pretty important events that we've seen coming out of major economies, including big central bank meetings and economic data. And certainly that's continued to an extent here in the US, where we had some much stronger than expected data on Monday coming out of the ISM Services Index. And the dollar has generally been strengthening further as the market continues to price out odds of near-term Fed easing. But other than that, you know, things have quieted down a little bit in terms of major events in the sort of a larger currencies, the major economies. And so we think it's a really good opportunity to talk more about emerging markets this week. And so this week, we're going to focus in on Central and Eastern Europe. And to do that, I'm happy to be joined by Emer Daly, who runs our CEMEA strategy team over in London. Emer, thanks very much for joining.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
So I want to start by talking about Hungary, because we've just had an important moment in terms of EU aid towards Ukraine. I mean, Hungary has been standing in the way of an aid package for Ukraine, but recently there's been a breakthrough here. I want to ask you about what that means for Hungary, what that means for the currency. We know political risk has been an important factor in Eastern Europe for a long time, given what's happened, given the Russia's war in Ukraine. I want to ask you a bit about Hungary, given these recent developments.
Yeah, I mean, Hungary has been kind of the thorn in the EU side for a long time when it comes to major decisions, and especially around Ukrainian aid. It finally dropped its opposition last Thursday. But I would say the big takeaway from this is that Hungary, you know, dropping its opposition, it didn't manage to secure any of the withheld funding, 22 billion euros in withheld funding from the EU. So really, this was kind of a loss on Hungary's side. And furthermore, I think the EU really discovered a playbook in terms of how do you deal with Hungary and its veto power over this important EU's decisions. And effectively, you know, it used Hungary's weak spot, financial stability, against it. There was a leaked EU document, you know, a few days prior to the agreement being reached, which basically said they would withhold all future EU funding from the country as a potential option. And really kind of within the document, they spelled what kind of impact this was. This was really targeting, you know, Hungary's currency, Hungary's borrowing costs. So very clearly, you know, they knew that this would kind of instigate kind of financial crisis within the country. You know, Hungary very quickly backed down. And I think that, you know, it doing so without being able to, in exchange for any kind of EU funding, really shows that this hardened opposition by the EU is working. I'd also say, you know, this isn't the end to kind of political confrontations Hungary's having on international fields. Actually, just the other day, you know, the EU instigated an infringement procedure against Hungary over sovereignty laws that Hungary has recently implemented at the end of last year. And actually, furthermore, we've got the US also looks set to kind of join the fray. It's, you know, angered over Hungary's continued refusal to ratify Sweden's access to NATO, and kind of a top US senator even suggested that they could impose sanctions on Hungary over corruption grounds because it continues to withhold. So unfortunately, we've had progress, but definitely Hungary is at the losing end of this, and it looks like actually the fight's only going to continue.
So from a currency perspective, where do you think this leads the Hungarian currency? I mean, we're talking about not just the political risks surrounding Russia and Ukraine, but also, you know, central bank policy. I know this has been an economy that's been in big focus for, you know, previously high carry, and, you know, how that intersects with its political risks. How are you thinking about the currency here as we sort of take a broader approach going, you know, sort of incorporating these economic factors as well as the politics?
Yeah, so I think it kind of, there's two kind of main angles to this. So yes, there's a politics. So obviously, you know, there's downside political risk. It is far from our base case. But, you know, if we did get to the extreme scenario of US sanctions, that would certainly see a depreciation in the currency. And also it matters from a funding perspective. You know, EU funds have been a considerable source of financing for the government. Obviously, debt is at an elevated level post-COVID, post-energy crisis. And we've seen significant revisions in Hungary's budget deficit, which is really struggling to finance. So that adds to kind of a call to actually get rates, interest rates lower, to basically support Hungary's bond market, and also kind of ease refinancing costs. The second element is monetary policy. It all kind of comes back to it. You know, inflation is coming off steadily in Hungary. They did have the EU's highest borrowing costs, and they are cutting at a significant clip. They started, you know, with 100 basis point moves in their effective borrowing cost. They've now reduced that to 75 basis points, but it is a very significant pace of easing. I think Hungary for so long was really held up because it offered investors just such lucrative carry relative to other EM peers. That carry is very slowly being chipped away. I think other EM peers, for example, Poland, will actually close that carry gap and offer, you know, investors just the same amount of carry with a lot less political risk.
So I think it's that's a really important point you bring up, because I feel like this intersection between you know, carry and political risk is very important, not just for, you know, not just for emerging markets, but for all economies. And I mean, as we look across emerging markets, a lot of them have seen progress on inflation that's allowed for these easing cycles to really pick up. And Hungary is one of these economies where the easing cycle, I guess, has really gone at pace. You mentioned Poland here. I think it's a great time to loop in Poland. You sort of hinted at the change in, you know, the change in the outlook between these two economies and these two currencies as it relates to carry. But can you talk a little bit about politics in Poland and how that's been influencing the currency as well?
Yeah, so, you know, there's also been kind of fast-paced political developments in Poland. So we did have a new government come into power back in October. What we've seen really is a power struggle between the new incoming government, but also President Duda, who's effectively aligned with the opposition. And, you know, unfortunately, I think President Zuma has done everything to kind of agitate this kind of change in power and the new government's kind of pledge to unwind, you know, 8 years of very nationalistic populist rule in Poland. You know, we had the arrest of two opposition lawmakers in the presidential palace. We had kind of a scene the other day where these two lawmakers were trying to gain access to the parliamentary buildings and were effectively stopped by guards. And now the president has said that he will send all parliamentary legislation to the Constitutional Tribunal for review. So basically really trying to agitate what's happening on the ground in Poland. But I think what's interesting is that, you know, since this has happened, since the new government has come to power, actually Poland hasn't really underperformed. Its currency is kind of middle ranking. It's actually outperformed another of its EM peers. I think investors know that, you know, unwinding, you know, all these years of kind of nationalist rule, it takes time. It's not going to happen overnight. And I think they're very clear that things are on the right footing. We've got Poland now coming back to the EU fold. So I do think it is a change. And probably where it matters most for the currency is actually when it comes to the central bank. So we had a very front-loaded easing cycle in Poland, but ever since we've had a new government in power, actually they've completely done a 180. They've changed completely hawkishly. They've paused their easing cycle. And, you know, just recently we've had the Polish central bank effectively saying that despite inflation really falling steadily in Poland, effectively rates could be on hold for the rest of this year.
Yeah, that does represent a pretty significant change. If I remember a few months ago when the election was about to take place, there were some accusations that the central bank easing cycle may have been timed around the timing of that election. So that is a pretty significant change. Do you think in terms of the currency, you mentioned that it's been sort of a middle of the pack performer, you know, within its sort of peer group. Do you think that they, how do you feel about the outlook for here? Is this a currency that you think has further room to appreciate, maybe on crosses or within the region? Is there an expectation about performance, you think, for the Polish zloty?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think, you know, there's contrasting central bank outlooks between Hungary and Poland really show that actually monetary policy is very divergent within the region. So I do think, you know, that Poland will really close that carry gap with, you know, Hungary, which is obviously easing at a very accelerated pace. So it really allows actually Poland, the Polish currency, an opportunity to outperform its peers, we think, especially against the Hungarian forint. And we've certainly seen that today in the aftermath of the Polish Central Bank press conference, where the Polish zloty is considerably higher. I think it really is, as opposed to politics, even though they might, you know, be very controversial and headline grabbing, actually it's kind of the more boring monetary policy kind of stasis that we have at the moment, which will be the biggest driver behind the zloty.
So I do want to switch gears here for a moment and talk about something that actually just happened a few hours ago as we're recording on Thursday morning here in the U.S. Moving to the Czech Republic, Eurocheck is significantly higher this morning in response to the decision by the Czech National Bank today. This looks like, it's just looking at the currency price action today, this looks like it was a surprise for the market. Talk me through the decision today, what the Czech National Bank did, and why you think the currency reaction has been so severe.
Yeah, this was like almost a 50-50 split decision going into this. So basically the market, you know, if you look at kind of Bloomberg survey forecasters, they were really split whether the central bank was going to go 25 basis point cut or a full 50 basis point cut. You know, we've had two, you know, in the run up to this decision, we had two central bank board members effectively backing, you know, already accelerating the pace of easing in Czech Republic to 50 basis points. But, you know, this was this feeling that, you know, they're going to want to see the outcome of this January annual repricing that's quite traditional in the Czech Republic. So they won't go now. Effectively, they'll wait until they get these numbers. But they went for the full front-loaded 50 basis point rate cut, really took the market by surprise. And what I guess kind of reinforced that kind of hawkish scent was actually the nuances around it. So we saw the vote count was actually 6-1. So there was a broad majority that wanted to accelerate the easing pace. And remember, this is only the second step in its easing pace. Already they're picking up to a 50 basis point move. It was 6-1 to go to 50 basis points. Furthermore, actually another member voted for 75 basis points. So already kind of including that possibility that they could increase that pace of easing further. If you looked across the updated economic forecast, it was really clear the reasons why. So they downgraded the long-term inflation outlook, both kind of headline inflation and monetary policy relevant inflation. They also slashed the GDP growth outlook, both for 2024 and 2025. And they also kind of revised down their own projections of the inflation path. So it really kind of shows that contrasting difference where you have a central bank like the Czech Republic that was really slow, really cautious in coming to the easing cycle, despite inflation really falling slowly, that now actually has to offset it with a faster pace of easing when it does go.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting in the context, like, as I mentioned, of, you know, how we talk about this a lot in the G10 space, and it's certainly true in emerging markets as well, which is, how quickly are these central banks going to come around to easing, and how much delivered easing could they give? And I think it's important context, the vote count, which you mentioned, that this was not as close a decision in the minds of the central bankers as it seemed to be in the market, right? Where most, you know, all of them voted for at least 50 basis points, with one actually voting for an even larger move. So like you said, I think opening that door for more aggressive moves. What do you think this means for the currency here? I mean, Eurocheck has been, you know, broadly speaking, on a sort of steady uptrend over the last almost call it 10 months or so, from sort of a bottoming in about April of last year. We've been on a steady grind higher. And now after today's move, we've broken pretty decisively above 25 the figure in Eurocheck. How are you thinking about the Czech koruna here in light of this move? And do you think this, as you mentioned, is this a moment where it really opens the door for much more aggressive easing from the National Bank?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, Eurocheck has been kind of climbing higher over the last few months. So I guess the concern at this place was, you know, already historically quite weak. However, we really think there is further to go. Actually, if you look at from a broader perspective, it's only really kind of reversed the strengthening that it had after the central bank in the middle of last year kind of came out and said that they would do FX intervention specifically to, you know, reinforce and support the currency. And it does look like they are ready to accelerate the pace of easing. And I think there's actually a broader kind of structural story here. So Czech Republic is known as the Detroit of Europe, and it is for a reason. So Czech really kind of built its name in manufacturing cars and supplying the EU single market. Unfortunately, that is combustion car engines, obviously kind of diesel and petrol fueled. And really, you know, this global shift to EV really makes the kind of risk making that Czech economic model almost obsolete. They really kind of failed to gain traction in terms of getting that really needed investment into EVs for the Czech economy. You know, there was kind of a big kind of story which broke where, you know, they actually failed to get an EV battery plant from actually one of their most kind of loyal European car manufacturers. And if you look at their percentage of global greenfield investment over the last 10 years, it's really dropped considerably, where we've seen other economies such as Mexico, such as Poland, we've seen their global share of greenfield investment really jump significantly. So I think in this kind of reworking of global supply chains in the context of nearshoring, there's winners and there's losers. And unfortunately, I think that the Czech Republic looks to be a loser in that. So I am forecasting more pronounced weakness for the Czech koruna.
Yeah, I mean, for all of these currencies, but it sounds like for Czech Republic in particular, you know, there are linkages to European growth in the European manufacturing sector. And we know that, you know, relative to services, for sure, manufacturing has been a point of weakness in not just the European economy, but the global economy. And that sounds like it has important implications for these economies, in particular, the Czech Republic going forward. I believe that's probably all we have time for today. Emer, thank you very much for joining. Really great to run through some of the big themes and developments in Central and Eastern Europe this week. And to our listeners, thank you very much for joining. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider liking our channel and subscribing as well, so that you get our newest podcasts the moment they're released. Thank you very much.